Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, DA. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
That's great. I'm already turned around. I didn't even do my intro. Everybody, this is Pop Rocks Radio. I'm pop artist Jamie Rocks, and our featured guest tonight, our Halloween show, is horror and, well, I guess zombie author DA Roberts. And DA's calling in from Springfield, Missouri. How is you, is it raining there? Is it a big storm going on?
It's been raining. It's been raining off and on for days.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it on the news. It's like this giant, you know, just massive storm across the middle of the country there. It's crazy. Well, hopefully you guys aren't getting too washed out. Or you don't have any flooding. Do you have flooding issues there in Springfield?
Well, some of the low-lying areas have got creeks up and everything like that. But here in the main part of town, it's been pretty well fine.
Awesome. Well, that's good to know. Hopefully the trick-or-treaters there in Springfield didn't get washed out either tonight.
It doesn't seem to have slowed them down any.
Do you get a lot of kids that come to the house there?
There's quite a few in the neighborhood.
Excellent. Well, that's always a good thing, you know? That's always a good thing. Well, great. So why don't we tell the folks, for those who aren't familiar, you have written two books that are out, if memory serves me right, and you're working on your third right now.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's give everybody a brief kind of synopsis of what we're talking about here.
My series is called the Ragnarok Rising series. Book one's called Ragnarok Rising: The Awakening, and book two is the Reckoning. Book three will be called The Crossing. I'm actually in the process of becoming a self-published author. Through some disputes with my publisher, I've decided to take the series independent, and then we'll be relaunching all three of the books within the next few weeks.
Oh, okay, excellent. And we have links up to your main page there and whatnot. So people, and I believe your Facebook and all that, they can get there from your page to keep abreast of what's going on and what's happening with everything. That's great. I think that's amazing that you're doing the self-published route. I my hat goes off to you. I've been an independent working painter for the past, 13, 14 years now. And in my world, in my business, one of the first things everybody asks you, well, what gallery are you with? And I learned about a decade ago, I saw it coming that galleries really weren't the way to, they're great if you want to give half your money away.
Exactly.
And I'm looking at writers like yourself, and I profess I know nothing about the writing world or anything. But it seems to me it's the same type of game. You know what I mean? If you can control all your own distribution, with the internet and everything now, you kind of sell directly to the consumer, I imagine, right? I mean,
it's a lot easier to do that now, especially with the advent of Amazon and both the Kindle and the Nook. It's become pretty easy for anybody experience of the writing behind them and a manuscript to get that set up, put a cover on it, and get it out there.
Oh yeah, distribution, and it's crazy. I can only imagine. I look at a situation like that and go, oh my gosh, what a lot of work that people don't really, people go into like a Borders or a Barnes and Noble, I think, and they see a book on a shelf. And, I imagine guys like me and you, we look at that and imagine all the points it took to get that book from the writer's mind, writing it, rewrites, et cetera, you know what I mean? And then get that on the shelf it's like anything. You know, you go to the grocery store and you see a head of lettuce, it just didn't appear there. There's a lot to that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's great. That's great. So with your series, now, these the books take place from the is it a sheriff that's the main guy, or is it a correctional officer? Or
he's actually a corrections officer, a guy by the name of Wiley Grant. Mm-hmm. The story centers around him. He's with a small department in the Midwest, and it's about how it's really the human side of how they deal with a zombie apocalypse. These are just everyday people. There's first responders. There's soldiers. There's just everyday people. And initially they thought, from everything they'd heard in the news and were told, that it was just rioting in the streets. And when they realize it's not, they realize how unprepared they are for the zombie apocalypse.
Well, yeah, I can only imagine.
Kind of like the old joke, nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. Wow, yeah, that's very true. Now, that's interesting, and it kind of fits along the current, you know, zombie phenomena, I guess I'll say, in pop culture. It's everywhere, you know. That is, I'd say in the last, 3-4 years? Well, actually, I'd say 2 or 3 years probably is the, that's kind of the go-to trend in a lot of pop culture, a lot of mainstream stuff. I mean, zombies have been around for a long time. What, since the late 60s with Romano and all that? And
George Romero.
Yeah, Romero. And but now, I mean, it's there. You know, Walking Dead on AMC, that's getting, you know, they just got picked up today, I read in Variety, for season 5.
I was expecting that, and I couldn't see them canceling it.
Oh, no. They're making
not as wildly popular as it is.
Right. AMC's never seen numbers. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Mad Men and everything, but it ain't getting the numbers that Walking Dead
definitely
is.
Definitely not.
You know? And the interesting thing that I like your concept, too, with the, because a lot of corrections officers or people, you know, this will be that character has a working knowledge of tactics and weapons and, kind of hairy situations and whatnot, I would imagine. You would think he would be prepared than, say, you know, an accountant or somebody like that, you know. The bagger, the ice cream man or the bagger at the grocery store would probably not fare as well as a corrections officer, I imagine. But still.
As a corrections officer myself, I actually am a corrections officer in my full-time job.
Okay.
We deal with a lot of a lot of crowd control issues, especially when you're working a pod alone, you know, 100 to 1, you're used to dealing in very tense situations. And, if things get hairy, we're already at that mindset where we're ready to take it to the next level without having to really make that mental shift. We're already on edge.
Right.
And it really just brings that dynamic to it of a group of people that were already paranoid to start with and had to really face something that was outside their comfort zone.
Well, that's great. That's cool. You know, let me ask you, just to get into the corrections side of things a little bit. I mean, that's a heck of a job. Now, being like, I mean, that's got to be pretty stressful, too, being in that, you know, that tense, taut bow kind of mentality. I mean, every day you go to work, you don't know, is today some going to go off, or, you know, I mean, hopefully not, right? Is it not as bad as, like, what I've seen in movies? Because that's really my only experience with that is movies and whatnot, you know?
Well, a lot of what you see in movies is really highly sensationalized, but it is a pretty dangerous job. Mm. You know, I personally, earlier this year, got kicked in the head multiple times by an inmate, got my head bounced off a steel bunk, wound up in a neck brace with a concussion for a while. And it is a dangerous job. A lot of people don't see that aspect of it. They think, like, you know, that once the inmates are behind a jail cell door, that all the problems cease. And really, once they're incarcerated, it just starts a whole new set of problems. We're actually locked in the pods with them, and they're not locked down 24 hours a day. They're out in the day room. A lot of times you're in a group of inmates where you're outnumbered 75 to 100 to 1.
Mm.
And that's just our day.
Right. That's Tuesday. Yeah.
That's any given day of the week.
That's, you know, that's interesting. I mean, these aren't people that are, you know, we're not talking about, you know, PTA moms here. These are people coming off drugs and, you know, having you know, social issues and what have, you know, who knows, a whole host of probably hardware and software issues, you know, and so you're not dealing with cream puffs, you know.
I've often said nobody's in there for singing too loud in the choir.
Exactly. That's a very good point. Well, we, you know, thank you for your service and everything. It's a very
thank you.
Needed position in our civilized society and whatnot. It keeps it going. You know, it's terrible that there has to be somebody to have to do that job, but I'm glad there are people doing it, you know, rather than having those bad guys run amok, you know.
Well, I often tell people it takes a special kind of crazy to do this for a living.
I can only imagine. So we go from this, and you started writing in your spare time and whatnot. What, a couple years ago, or is this all fairly new?
I've wanted to be a writer since I was a kid. I started out writing little cheesy short stories when I was really young and giving them to my mom to read. My mother was always encouraging. And through high school and into adulthood, I tried my hand at one thing or another. I've written a lot of poetry over the years, mostly for my wife. Yeah, I've always wanted to be a novelist, to publish a novel, mm-hmm. and it was something my wife encouraged me on early on, and we've been married 20 years.
Wow, that's awesome, man! Congratulations. Thank
you. She's put. Yeah, it takes a special kind of crazy for her to put up with me that long. But she encouraged me, and it wasn't too terribly long ago that I had this idea for the Ragnarok series, and she said you should write it. And I was like, I don't know, you know. She said, well, the only way you're ever going to make it and become an author is if you just sit down and do it. And I did. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot more work than I anticipated. And once it was written and I was happy with it, then even more work began, the editing process and then the marketing and then everything. And so it's actually been a lot more work than I anticipated, but it's been a tremendously great time. I've met a lot of great people. A lot of authors I've met, you know, other people in the industry, you know, people in the communications, like radio shows like yourself. I've met some fantastic people, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's been absolutely great, and I'm hoping it won't be too long before maybe I'll be able to just be an author.
Right, and that'll be the main thing. You know, it's, you know, and that's what a goal, you know. Heck of a lot safer.
I will. Yeah, I hope
withstanding
so.
Paper cuts and whatnot. No, I'm kidding.
Well, it brings me to mind the movie Misery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. His number one fan.
You killed who?
Oh, man.
You're going to write them back to life. Okay. Don't hit me with the mallet.
Ooh, I'm telling you. I remember it was about, probably 7 years ago when I had kind of, I was living in Southern California. I kind of come into a little bit of very limited semi-notoriety in that area. And I started getting bad emails from people, you know, from crazy people and whatnot. And one guy in particular, you know, had sent a particular nasty email, and we were getting ready to do some festival or something. And I, you know, I couldn't sleep for a couple of days. I just had visions of this guy stepping out of a crowd, you know what I mean? And we actually went down. We had a friend of ours on the police department there and showed him the email. You know, what do we do? And they said, well, we'll have people at this festival anyway. We'll just keep an extra eye in your area there. So, yeah.
I had a funny thing happen to me just two nights ago. I was on duty at work,
mm-hmm.
and I was sitting in our control room. I was working. I was assigned to the what we call master control, and our lieutenant brought a tour in from the outside. Was a group of college students.
Okay.
They were all criminal justice students.
Oh, okay.
And they were bringing them through, showing them the jail, and I noticed that as he was taking the tour through, one girl asked him a question, and I was down a hallway inside the glass and case control booth, and he kind of nodded and pointed back toward me, and I was like, okay, what's going on? I didn't think too much of it, and then I went ahead and let him into the buildings, because the master control controls all the doors and the cameras.
Okay.
So I let him into the pod they were going into, and a little while later they came back by, and when they get up by the window, the lieutenant again points right at me and nods and says something to the girl. Well, she comes around to the speaker and taps on the glass, and I said, yeah. She says, can I get your autograph? Well, apparently she knew about the books.
Oh, well, there you go. See, there you go. There you
go. Really
cracked
me up.
Well, that's awesome. Well, hey, how about that? That's pretty cool, huh? Was that your first brush with this oncoming celebrity that's going to be happening?
That was my first one at work. that was pretty funny.
Well, that's awesome.
My wife and I were actually having dinner in a restaurant where one of the scenes in book one takes place, and our waitress had read the book. And I happened to be wearing a T-shirt that had a zombie on it. And she says, "Do you like zombies?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "Well, I recently read this book, and one of the scenes in the book takes place in this restaurant." And she starts telling me about my book, and I start cracking up. My wife goes, "What's so funny?" She says, "He wrote it." She goes, "Oh, my God, really?" And so she runs back and gets her book, comes back and looks at the back page. She's like, oh! It was pretty funny.
Well, that's awesome. Now, let me ask you this. I was at a party the other day. We were having this conversation, and I said, you know, the next time I talk to a writer, I'm going to ask this because I don't know how this works. Do you I'm a big fan of our local library. I love libraries simply because I have a small place, and if I bought all the books I would want, I wouldn't have room for, you know, a refrigerator or me. And the great thing about a library is you go and you get a book and you read it and take it back. It doesn't take up any space, and do you submit your books to local libraries, or how does the library get the books? Do you any idea how that works? I don't know how that works at all.
Well, I actually got fairly fortunate with the local library because someone had sent an email to the library requesting they get my book.
Oh.
And they did. They picked up two copies of book one.
Wow.
And so far they've only got one copy of book two. But every time I look them up, I noticed that they've got multiple holds on them, so they're still doing well.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those listening, what I want you to do is Google your local library and request DA's books, if they get copies of those books for you there. And, hey, man.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get those books everywhere, right? That's a brilliant idea.
I was at the library, and I noticed that they had my book on the fantasy shelf.
Huh?
Which it's actually horror.
Right.
And I told the lady behind the counter, I said, "You have this misfiled." I said, "It's listed under fantasy. It should probably be listed under horror." She says, "Well, how would you know?" I said, "Well, I wrote it." And she's like, "Oh, no way." That was kind of fun.
She goes in her coffee break, "Oh, these authors coming in here all the time, telling us how to do our job." No, I'm kidding. That's pretty neat, man. That is pretty cool. I tell you, I've never had an experience like that. I did have – I saw a kid at a mall one time with one of my T-shirts on, and I was walking around like a peacock for a week after that. That was – I can only imagine, you know, people with the book and everything. That's pretty cool. So
it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling when someone actually wants you to sign something.
Wow.
Although I tend to joke with people now. I tell them that at this point in my career, it's actually probably going to make the book worth a little less if I sign it.
And, you know, the only time I ever get that is when the sheriff's deputies show up with a court summons. No, I'm kidding. I'm ex-wives and fraternity. No, I'm joking. anyhow, we got a little far afield here. But so this corrections officer, the zombie, they think there's riots happening. This is happening in the Midwest, in your area, I believe, right? Springfield and whatnot?
Yeah.
But it could be, and I'm not putting Springfield down by any means, but that could be, Springfield's a nice town. I like that town. But that could, you know, it could just as easily be your town, ladies and gentlemen, where this happens. And so they think there's rioting going on. That's what the cover story is, and from the government or the people on high. And next thing they know, the rioters are, what, eating people. No, your zombies aren't the typical classic old B-movie zombies where they're not wandering around wanting to eat people's brains. They just want to eat people, right?
Yeah, they just eat. they're not particularly picky about the brains. I do break my zombies down a little differently than most other zombies in the genre. Mm-hmm. In book one, I have five categories of zombie. The first one I call a grabber, which is a zombie that is either trapped between a couple of cars, pinned against something, seat belted into a car or something like that. For whatever reason, it can't walk, it can't move. All it can do is grab you as you go by. Then I have ones I call crawlers, which are zombies that can't walk for whatever reason. Maybe they, you know, maybe their legs are damaged. Maybe somebody, it was like in the case of somebody that was in a wheelchair that had been turned, but they can't walk. And all they can do is crawl along after you. Then I call one, I have a group I call shamblers, which are your basic George Romero-esque classic, you know, moaning, slow-moving zombies. They're the ones that most people think of, you know, fairly slow-moving, nasty-looking, you know, tend to moan. Mm-hmm. And then I've got one I call sprinters, and they're very fast. I got to thinking about it, you know, if somebody had been bitten in the arm, for example, and the process to turn didn't take very long, when they turned, I didn't see any reason why their legs wouldn't be, you know, still capable of going fast.
Right.
If there was no damage to their legs already and they turned quickly, well, there's no, you know, serious lividity, I didn't see any reason why they wouldn't be fast. And since they could be fast, they also don't get tired. So that a fast, unrelenting zombie that just doesn't get tired is a pretty frightening thought.
I'm telling you. The Zombie Land movie I'm thinking of with the fast zombies. That wasn't the first zombie movie. I'm not as well versed in the horror genre as probably yourself, I'm sure. Or probably a lot of our listeners, actually. I can't remember the first fast zombie movie I saw, but I remember thinking, that's not good, because, you know, I'm a bit of a chunky monkey myself, and I got to tell you, I probably wouldn't do well. I would need a motorcycle or something to get away.
I know the feeling.
Roller skates, anything.
First movie I ever saw fast zombies in was the remake of Dawn of the Dead. When they remade that in the mid 2000s, that was the first one I saw that they were fast. But that one kind of creeped me out. The fifth type of zombie that I had for my series I called shriekers, those are the ones that really bugged me. For whatever reason, when they notice somebody or they sense somebody nearby, they let out a scream, which will attract other zombies. And that's the fifth category. That's the five ways I broke them down. And the shriekers definitely are the most dangerous of the group, because those will call, that one will call all the others down on you.
Now that's interesting, because I have not, again, like I said, I'm not. Super well versed in zombie movies and whatnot, and books. I haven't seen that before. That's a new one on me, DA. The shrieker. I like that. I like that a lot. That's, yeah. You don't want to run into them. That's
not definitely
good at all.
Not.
Yes, there is actually. Sorry about that. I got so excited. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are. This is a typical live show, and I got excited about the show at the beginning, and I forgot to open the chat room. The chat room is now open. DA just gave me a nudge behind the scenes here. Hello, DA. And also, if you have a question or comment for DA, let me give our listeners our telephone number here where they can call in. It is 347-850-8598, and there we go. Again, that's 347-8598, 850-8598. I got all turned around there, DA. You know what it was? Telling me about the shrieking zombies. That's not good at all.
That'll get you every time.
I've watched a few, you know, I need to catch up on The Walking Dead on AMC. I haven't. I think they had run into the governor at the prison was probably the last one I've seen.
That was last season.
Last season, yeah. I didn't see any shriekers in that.
Of the zombies I've seen on The Walking Dead are all fairly slow movers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any sprinters or anything like that. I've seen some crawlers.
I tell you, one of my favorite scenes is that in the pilot of that, where at the end where he's in where is he at? He's in Atlanta, that's where he's at. And, man, he's on that horse, and then they all come in, and he gets in that tank, and they take that horse down. Ooh, that wasn't good at all.
I don't know why he didn't try to start the tank.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Well, yeah, did it have gas in it? Or
He never tried.
I mean, I don't know how to drive a tank either, but I could have
I would imagine that if I was completely surrounded by zombies, I'd have given a hell of a try to figure it out.
I would have drove that out of town in first gear if I had to, in reverse. Whatever.
Well, even if all you did was spin in circles, you're going to mow the crowd down.
That's amazing. I love shrieking zombies. That's pretty cool. So now if they've infected, do they have contact with the outside world, your characters and whatnot, or is it, if they're in Springfield, they got to be in St. Louis, right, in Chicago?
They lose contact with everybody around them pretty quickly. They start noticing that as the rioting is reported in big cities, that it's not very long before they lose contact with that city. So they really, at that point, when they realize it's zombies, it's already too late, and they really don't have any contact with anybody. It's not until book two when they start trying to make contact with other people with shortwave communications, the old shortwave ham radios.
Oh, yeah.
They actually managed to find a few other groups of survivors, but by and large, the infrastructure's gone.
Right. And then you have, I imagine, the whole Lord of the Flies situation happening, where the survivors have their own little hierarchy of governance, we'll say, and whatnot.
I would say every group's going to be slightly different.
You know, it's like the old saying, you know, everybody likes anarchy until, you know, nobody picks up the trash.
Exactly.
I'm an old club kid and punk rocker and all that, and, you know, I see youngsters. And it's funny because it comes, as with age, comes a little bit of wisdom. And I was just telling somebody this the other day. You know, you watch a movie like The Road Warrior, a classic, you know, post-apocalyptic. And most people are like, oh, yeah, that would be great. Unless you're the guy, it'd be great if you're the guy with the mohawk riding the motorcycle. But if you're the guy who's chained the motorcycle behind him, that you don't want to be him. You know, that's not good.
Oh, definitely not.
And a whole might is right mentality, you know, or situation. Oh, that's rough, man. That's rough. And especially in a post-apocalyptic scenario, you know, I mean, there isn't trucks hauling in food every day, you know. I mean, you're going to run out of stuff.
Unless you're good at scavenging or know how to grow your own food, you're going to run out pretty quickly.
And can you imagine trying to grow? So, okay, well, we're going to grow a field of wheat or whatnot. You know, well, I was out in the North 40 yesterday, but a bunch of zombies came up and I had to shoot them all. You know, I mean, you know, farmers got enough going on without having to fight off zombies and what have you.
Long-term survival would become very problematic. You'd have to start looking at creating not only a walled place to live within, but you'd also have to secure an area to grow your crops. And I start branching into that as the book series progresses. It goes from immediate survival to, you know, trying to rescue other survivors, to where they're starting to branch into beyond the now, where they start getting into long-term survival, where some of these prepper skills start coming into play.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you talk about that, because I think it was last year when the CDC did their zombie, it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, actually put up a zombie preparedness thing on their website.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and I mean, for those listening, you know, they weren't, I don't know, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, but I don't think they were really concerned about an actual zombie apocalypse happening. They're saying this is a good way to be prepared for any type of, you know, famine, flood, you know, whatever happened, you know, a tornado, whatever.
If you're prepared for a zombie apocalypse, you're prepared for a lot of emergencies.
Exactly, yeah, any type of emergency. And a lot of people, now, you know, after that happened, I got to thinking, I live in South Florida, and, you know, we get a lot of hurricanes down here. Knock on wood, we haven't this year, thank God. But, you know, I mean, I actually put together a little kit just to keep in the house, not because, you know, if zombies happen, I don't know how well the kit will help, I guess. It ain't going to help us live, but it would be nice to have. But I think everybody needs to have a, you know, with the crazy weather we have and whatnot, earthquakes if you're on the West Coast and what have you, it's always good to have a survival kit, you know, at least to get you by for a couple days, right?
Well, you always just got to remember the rule of three. The rule of three says you can go 3 minutes without air, 3 hours without shelter in extreme environments like snow, extreme cold, extreme heat, three days without water, 3 weeks without food. The rule of three really covers all of that.
Wow, and try to go 2 days without eating, ladies and gentlemen. 3 weeks looks like a long time by day two.
You can survive it. You won't like it, but you can survive it.
I hear you'll be a lot thinner, But, yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. So that's cool. And so they're in book two. They're branching into the they're rebuilding, right? Now,
right.
Have they determined that they're going to coexist with the zombies? They said, okay, well, we have to have a civilized society with zombies. I mean, this is just our new paradigm. We're going to have to, coexist with this and create a civilization, a working, situation. That's got to be an interesting take as a writer, to pot to stir, so to speak.
They realized pretty quick that the zombies weren't decaying at anything like the rate they thought they would. Hmm. They're discovering that the zombies are probably going to be around for a good long time. So they had to really factor that into their plans.
I see. And the zombie, the concept of zombie, too, it's almost like a virus, they don't procreate the way a living thing would do that's found in nature. They bite. So that's how they get more zombies,
Exactly.
Are the zombies aware that do they have a need to spread themselves, per se, to create more zombies? Or does it just kind of happen through happenstance?
I've always seen it as the zombie virus affects the most primitive part of the brain. And really, there's not much more primitive urge in the human body than the need to feed. Mm-hmm. And since the virus seems to affect the brain stem or the pineal gland, basic motor functions, enough to get it ambulatory, that's where the primitive part of the brain is anyway. And I think that's where the need to feed comes in, because they're just at an instinctual level at that point.
Right. And, ladies and gentlemen, I know a lot of us, a lot of listeners and stuff that I have, and, I get a lot of people from a scientific background and what have you, and everybody kind of chuckles a little bit at the concept of a zombie situation. But in nature, there's actually, I think, a couple types of ants. I don't know, it's not the ant that's the zombie. They get a fungus or something, and the fungus takes over the motor control of the ant and causes, the ants to crawl up to the top of the grass stems and whatnot, so they get eaten and by whatever, and there's more fungus made. And cool. Okay, yeah, I just got your message there. Yeah, that'll work. I'm sorry. I've been having weird stuff with that Gmail lately. I don't know. I was having stuff with my Dropbox the other day. I don't know what's up with that. Anyway, I'm on the air talking about this. I don't know why. Yeah, I know. ADD, I guess. So, now with book three, what's the general gist of book three, or can you let us know in a roundabout kind of way?
In book one, like I said, it was more immediate. In book two, they start planning, just beyond the now. They're trying to consolidate and actually create something that they can defend and live in. In book three, they're realizing that everything they're doing around the city of Springfield just isn't enough. They need to get out of the area. They've got to find a place that has arable land where they can grow their own food. And it's where they actually start planning the next step. It's where they start planning to rebuild. Book three will begin the rebuilding phase, where they actually start trying to find a place to establish a community where they can be safe and where they can grow food.
I gotcha. Interesting. Because, you think about it, and it's fascinating, because not only is this a look at zombies, this is a look at our civilization, how we live, and the organization of our civilization. I don't think a lot of people realize that, it's very nice. We're almost coddled on how we live, if the road gets a hole in it, somebody's going to fix it. If the power goes down, somebody's out there doing that, getting it going. When you just have a limited group of people trying to do something, you know, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, that changes everything. You know, it's not a matter of, oh, we need some milk, let's just run down to the market, grab some milk. Everything becomes much more difficult. Everything becomes, you know, how do we get this? How do we continue this?
Right.
And I think I bring that urgency to the picture. If you ever read the novels, I think you'll see that I try to bring that level of realism, that element to the characters.
Well, that's excellent. Are the characters holding up all right? I mean, that's a pretty horrific world to be, you know, throwing them in. Do they maintain okay, or do they have some issues?
Some do. Some don't do so well. And of course, it being the zombie apocalypse, you're going to see a lot of characters come and go. Mm-hmm. You'll see new faces and you'll lose a lot of faces. But unfortunately, that's the way it works with a zombie apocalypse. Even the people that you would think are most prepared may not survive.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, the interesting thing with that is it's almost like, you know, like ancient battlefield scenario, you know, where I was talking to somebody about this the other day. We were talking about, I don't know, the Peloponnesian War or something. And, you know, if back then, even if you got a scratch, you know, you were pretty much done. You know, that could get infected and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Happen, you know?
We go from modern medicine to Civil War level battlefield triage in a fairly short order. You got anything more complicated than a bad cut, and you risk death and infection.
Right. You know, it reminds me of that scene. What was the name of that movie with Castaway, where he
Castaway,
and he had that bad tooth and
knocked it out with the ice skate.
Oh man.
That's brutal.
I'm telling, because we've all had a bad tooth, I'm sure, and there's nothing worse than tooth pain. And now, just imagine knocking that out, pulling that out yourself, while, you know, the creatures of the undead are trying to eat you.
Yeah, I think I'll pass.
Not a fun Thursday. A fun Thursday at all.
I don't think I want to try myself at amateur orthodontia.
Oh, no. No, or any of that, you know, any of that, you know, man. So that's cool. So yeah, that's great. So here is Halloween. Now, are you, do you do a big to-do on Halloween, being a horror author and whatnot? You had said you have a couple youngsters, but they're kind of out of the trick-or-treating age group. Do you do your house up, or do you have little ones that come and all that kind of stuff? Or
have in the past, but this year we really didn't do much more than get some candy, which we ate most of it. And I'm undoubtedly we'll probably go get more once it's on clearance since Halloween's over.
That's, you know, I didn't think about that, DA. That is right. Tomorrow, all the candy goes on clearance.
Yeah, my wife will probably go out and buy a half a shopping cart full of candy, so we'll be pushing our candy intake to the limit for a while, I'm sure.
Oh, man.
But I'm hoping in the next couple of years, as things progress with the books, as I get more books out, by next Halloween I should have books 4 and possibly even 5 out. Depends on how things go with book 5. I might have book 5 done within a year. And if I've got five books out, I would kind of like to be that creepy guy at the end of the block with all the weird Halloween decorations in the yard.
Well, can you imagine? That'd be pretty neat, you know. I don't know. Years ago, I don't know if he still does it. I remember reading in a Time magazine or Newsweek or something where Stephen King, he had something where you could go on Halloween Eve or Halloween night or something and do a campfire type thing with him, and he would tell ghost stories, and you know, it was some amount of money, and all the money went to charity or something like that.
That's actually a fantastic idea. That gives me some ideas.
Yeah, you could do something like that. I mean, because you're kind of, you know, I assume you're kind of the horror author of your area, right, of Springfield there.
Yeah, funny you would bring up Stephen King, because about a year ago, I was doing an interview on a radio show out of California called NDB Media with Roger Noriega.
Oh.
And Roger's a great guy. I love being on his show. But he asked me, he says, are all your books set in and around the Ozarks? I said, yeah, I was always told to write what you know, and I know this area. I grew up
right.
deer hunting this area. I've walked these woods in a lot of these towns. I know this area well. I said, so I'll probably always either center my books here or they'll have ties to here. And he said, well, that kind of makes you the Stephen King of the Ozarks, right? And I laughed at the time. I said, well, that's a big set of shoes to fill. But, yeah, I would love to one day fill those shoes. But the funny thing is that nickname has popped up in several places.
See, there, I'm telling you, man. You're one of the – now, for those who don't know, I got into this radio gig as kind of a little hobby thing about a year ago. And, well, actually, yeah, it was about a year ago. And I had a little show I did for the first 6 months of that, and then the last few months have done this particular show. And, you know, it's interesting. I've known D.A. – oh, probably for about a good 9-10 months, I would say. And I got to say, D.A., you are one of the hardest working guys I know. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. I always tell people you can't get the ball in the hoop if you don't hustle it down the court, you know. And
exactly. I'm always trying to find a way to promote the books, to get the exposure out there, because even when I was with Pendrague Publishing, the legwork really was on my shoulders to go out and get the name of the books out there and get my name out there. And to me, it's all about the spotlight on the books, not the spotlight on myself.
Right.
I really want to get the word out there on the books, because I want people to read them and enjoy them, and hopefully, you know, send me an email or a message and tell me what they thought of them, because I love hearing that kind of thing. I love hearing from the people who've read the books. But at some point, I would like to get to the point to where I can still do local conventions, but I don't have to.
Have you been doing those lately?
Oh yeah, I've done a lot of them. But
oh, okay.
Even if I were to get on the level of Stephen King, you know, which, you know, I don't see that ever happening. Knock on wood. It'd be great if it did.
Right.
I'm not going to turn down the level of success, but I would still go to the local conventions, because that's where I got my start. That's where everybody knows me. I always want to be that accessible. I always want to be. Well, basically, I'm a farm kid from rural Missouri, and I don't see myself ever forgetting that, if you know what I mean.
Right. No, you know, it's important, you know, and it's who you are, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Well, that's cool, you know, and there's, I tell you, the horror convention crowd is a, you know, that's a species unto its own, and they are loyal, and they know their stuff. You have to, you can't fake it with them, you know what I mean? And, They're a great bunch of people, and they go to those conventions, and those conventions sell out and, you know, fill up, and it's just a wonderful thing. But, yeah, you sat at the table, huh, in those folding chairs.
Yeah. That's one thing I always tell. I've had a lot of authors that are looking to become published or working their way that way, and they've always, I've had a number of them ask me about, you know, how I've done it, about the process of getting there. It's one of the things I've always told people, along with the piece of information that was given to me about Write What You Know, is do your research. Those little details will make or break you. You know, it was like someone at a convention, when they read my book, they said one of the things that most impressed them was my terminology, because I wasn't one of those guys that referred to a magazine that went into a weapon as a clip, because it's not a clip. He said that was one of the things that impressed him. He says it struck him that I knew what I was talking about.
Right.
And it's the little things like that that'll kill you. Yeah, if you describe a weapon and then call it the wrong caliber, or if you describe a local landmark and then put it in the wrong spot, those little details will kill you. And that's one of the best pieces of advice that I can give everybody is do your research. Know what you're talking about.
It's very true. I personally, I'm a sci-fi guy. I'm a sci-fi nut, and I one of the things that annoys me to no end, and I can't even believe I'm going to say this. One of the things that annoys me, sci-fi speaking, in Star Trek, is the whole dilithium crystal thing. I like science fiction that knows what it's talking about, you know, or there's actual things. And I imagine with your book, in the horror game, it's the same thing. You know, you can't just make something up when it comes to, well, it was a big rifle and it shot 87 times. No, how it has to have bullets. You know, you have to... You can't just, like, you ever watch that movie? I'm sure you watch movies like that all the time where there'll be a gunfight out or something and the guy shoots 150 times and he never reloads.
My wife hates watching movies like that with me, because I am horrible about nitpicking them. I mean, if they show somebody in the military, I'll spot if they got the patches in the wrong spot.
Right.
She's like, "Will you quit? I'm trying to watch the movie." I'm like, "Well, it's driving me nuts."
Well, and you know, and you're a military guy. You know, that's important stuff, man. You imagine showing up for inspection and you had your patches done wrong?
Oh yeah, yeah, you get roasted.
Yeah, that ain't gonna fly, you know. You know, something you had mentioned too about being a deer hunter and whatnot. That's something in these apocalyptic scenarios too that people, you know, they just assume, well, this happens, I'll just kill a deer and cook it over a fire with a stick or something. No, man, you got to be able. You got to know how to dress a deer or something. I mean, there is a lot of things that you can't just kill something and then. You know, I mean, there's an art to. There's a reason butchers, you know, get paid and are butchers. You got to know what you're doing, man.
I know guys that have deer hunted for years without ever actually taking a deer down. There's a lot of skill to it.
Right.
If you don't know what you're doing, it's going to bite you.
Right. Well, that's you know, it's cool that. You come from a background and what, and gosh, the Ozark, what a pretty area too. I love that part of the country. That is just such a, for those who, if you've never been to the Ozarks area, ladies and gentlemen, that's just an outstanding part of the country. It's green and lush, and, very nice area there. Very pretty, very beautiful. But, you know, for a zombie apocalypse setting, how about that? What a juxtaposition.
That's one of the things I like about Springfield is even though Springfield is the third largest city in the state, you can drive in any direction you want, and just a few miles from town, you're in the woods.
Right.
It's not an urban sprawl area. You're not going to see a lot of heavy industrial. That Springfield does have all that, but it's all fairly close to town. Mm. And within a couple of miles of the city limits, heck, I've seen deer in town.
Right.
It's still a fairly rural area, despite the size of the city.
Well, that's excellent. So, what happens now? Do your corrections officer? Do the people in the jail start turning into zombies? I'm just curious. I'm looking at my notes here, and I was like, oh, I wonder if that happened.
Yeah, at one point they actually lose two of the cell blocks to the zombies and have to clean them out.
Now, if a zombie doesn't eat, like say a zombie's in a cell block, and he's in a cell, say, I mean, how long does he last without eating? Is the rule of three really doesn't apply to him? I mean, can he?
No, definitely not. Well, that's one thing that I do reveal in the books is they notice fairly early on is that they don't decay at anything approaching a normal rate. So, you know, I've never really addressed the issue of whether or not they would become inactive without feeding. But they don't really need to.
I gotcha.
So I would say they'd be just as active as they would at any other time.
That's interesting. That's, you know, and it's interesting. Like I said, it's zombies are everywhere in pop culture right now, and it's, I don't know if it's a, you know, the fear of disease or, you know, because every other year we have some new SARS or something happening, which usually, you know, or a swine flu or bird flu or something. I mean, it always gets my attention when I see it on the news, but fortunately, most of those haven't turned into any big, you know, super big deal, unless you're, you know, one of the people that gets them. Pandemics is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, again, the zombie virus could come from anything. I mean, it, like in the movie 28 Days Later, it could be a variation, a new type of rabies. It could be something that spawns off of Ebola. It could be a variant of the flu. We don't know that much about some of these viruses to know how far they're going to mutate or what they're going to turn into. That's the great thing about it is that you know, you just don't know, and finding a cure may be impossible, if not improbable.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I you know, with the ice melt off and all these glaciers receding and whatnot, I was watching a thing. I don't know, it's probably about a year ago on one of these History Channel or Discovery or something, and they found a woolly mammoth somewhere. I think it was in Siberia or something. The ice had receded. And boom, here's this woolly mammoth, and they could actually, you know, those pieces of fur and stuff still on this thing. And they're like, we're going to thaw this out. And I'm like, oh, that's great, you know, a bunch of microorganisms that we haven't been exposed to, you know, modern man, for the last 20,000 years or something. Who knows what's in that thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those things we, you know, kind of like in the movie Jurassic Park. And just because you can do it doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Right.
You know, they brought the dinosaurs back and dinosaurs promptly started eating people.
Right. Well, and you're right. I mean, it could be, who knows what it could be. You know, where you mess around with the wrong thing or, well, we were trying to cure this disease and this is what happened, you know. Weird stuff. And I think people inherently have that kind of Frankenstein creature fear, not just of technology, but especially biological technology. Because it's creepy, you know, inherently.
I mean, we could even see a zombie virus that's tailor-made. It could be released as a bioweapon. You just, you know, anything could cause it. And when you look at some of the things that are happening with some of the outbreaks of bird flu, as you pointed out, or swine flu, or anything like that, it not only becomes more frightening, it becomes suddenly probable.
Right. Let me give our number out again for those who, if you have a question or comment for DA, from zombies to self-publishing to, correction, whatever, we'll try to answer it for you. Our number here is 347-850-8598. Or if you're using Skype, I believe that's working. Actually, here we go. We have a caller. Let's put him on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi. Hey, Jamie. This is Tony Baker. Doug, it's always great to talk to you live here. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the series name and the Norse connection that you developed with Wiley.
Oh, absolutely. The series is called Ragnarok Rising. And if I don't know if you're familiar with Norse mythology at all, but Ragnarok is actually the Viking equivalent of Armageddon. It's the end of the world. In fact, in the Viking and Asatru religions, you will actually find... I'm sorry? I keep hearing feedback. You'll find that that the Vikings actually believed in undead. There were a number of different types of undead in Viking mythology. But also, the Ragnarok itself, it talks about a army of the dead rising from the Viking hell, which is with one L, coming from hell, led by Loki to destroy the world of men. So Ragnarok really actually played right into the Norse mythology for me. And then we deal with the fact that Wiley Grant is a Norse pagan. He wears the Thor's hammer. He believes in the old gods, and there's a lot of symbolism used in there. You'll see, you know, where Wiley sees what he believes are Odin's ravens, and he prays to the Norse gods in a number of places. The Norse connection really fits well because with the returning of the dead and the unknown origin of this virus, it plays right into the entire Ragnarok. The only thing it didn't really bring into play was what's called the Fimbul winter, which is supposed to be 3 years of unrelenting winter where you don't see the sun. I didn't think anybody would survive that, so I didn't really bring that into play.
Right. Wow. That's interesting. MBD Media, a sports channel in the chat room, is asking, DA, do you believe the same as Wiley?
Well, that's kind of a touchy subject.
He researched it well. How about that, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah, I have those leanings. We can put it that way.
Okay. Hopefully his Sunday minister isn't listening, or it's going to cost a little extra something in the collection plate when it comes around this week. Well, that's awesome. Now, Tony, you're working on our caller here. You're working on a new horror novel yourself right now, if I understand, right?
Yeah, I am. But this is for Doug tonight. I'm actually a huge fanboy of D.A. Roberts and his series. He is actually one of the authors out there that finally prompted me to sort of make my decisions to throw some stuff in the mix there.
I'm perfectly okay with that. Tony's got a great book coming out, Survivors of the Dead, and I am absolutely looking forward to reading this when it's released. Tony's a great guy. He's really really brought a kind of an interesting dynamic. He's writing in the world of another series. The series is called the Voyage of the Dead series. Mm-hmm. His is really kind of a takeoff of that, but it ultimately takes on a life of its own. And I'm really I'm super excited about this book being released. And I think if y'all have a chance to check it out, check out Tony Baker's check out Tony Baker's website and his book.
Sorry, you know, Jamie, this cost me $20. I got to send him now, you know. Doug, I really appreciate it, my brother. I really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. So that's Survivors of the Dead. That comes out in January, doesn't it, Tony?
In January, yes.
Oh,
yes,
right,
in January. I'm
He's
on the home stretch.
To it.
Yeah. So we'll get there. We'll get there. I'll make sure that you guys get free copies of the book. So.
Oh, that'll be awesome. We'll have you on one of the shows when you're ready, Tony. Keep me in mind.
I appreciate it, Jamie. You do a great job, Doug.
Oh, well,
as always, you're doing a fantastic job here. I would throw out one more question, and I always enjoy your comments on this. Just your moralistic viewpoint of your series. What is the point that you're trying to get across to your readers? I know what the point is, but I'd like to hear you explain it.
what I'm really trying to bring to the plate here is these characters. Not only are they just normal people, but they hold on to their morality. These are characters that still stick true to their core values no matter what the world is doing around them. Like the main character, Wiley, he's married, and even though the opportunity has presented itself for him to find other women, he still holds true to his vows to his wife. And it's really about the best in humanity in all of us.
Right.
That even though the worst is happening around them, they don't give up that part of themselves. They stay true to themselves, they stay true to each other, and they hold on to those values even when faced with other people that have no values whatsoever. Like in book two, some of the other survivors they run into are about as bad as you can get. But despite all the adversity, these characters are really doing their best to try to keep what makes them human. Because if they give that up, then they're no better than zombies that are trying to kill them.
Right. All is lost. That's excellent. What a great point that is, you know. It makes you think. And, you know, the human spirit coming through there in the worst of possible imagined situations. Wow. Heavy stuff, D.A., heavy stuff. That cool stuff, you know. Very awesome. So, D.A., we're working on book three. You're going to have all these out yourself here in a few weeks. And, folks, we want to give a special thanks for Tony for calling in and whatnot. He is a cool guy. I'm friends with him on Facebook. He's a very nice guy. Always has some interesting posts on there. And, folks, add Doug, or D.A. on your Facebook, too, D.A. Roberts, because he always has some interesting posts and whatnot, too. You and I got to tell you, D.A., I posted the other day the mystery picture that my dad has on his keychain, and you were the first guy on there to know what that was. And
Well, it's ironic because I'm literally looking at mine right now. My keys are laying on the desk in front of me. I've had a P-38 can opener on my key ring since my dad gave me one in 1986. And I don't have the same one because I've broken a couple of them over the years.
Right.
But I've always had one. I carried one throughout the Army, and I still carry one today.
Well, and you know, ladies and gentlemen, if the zombie apocalypse happens, find a can opener. You're going to need one.
You're going to look pretty stupid with a plastic spoon and a can of ravioli and no way to open it.
That's right. And, you just don't think. These are things people don't think about. That's interesting. That's cool stuff. I can't wait. You know, I'm so excited that you're doing this on your own too, D.A. You know, it's just so much better. I'm telling you because you have control, and control in any type of business is just so paramount to success, you know?
I totally agree. I learned a lot of lessons, and Pendrig, I'm always going to be grateful to Pendrig for giving me my start.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be doing a lot of different directions that I really didn't have the option of doing before.
Right.
For one example, I was approached by some friends of mine with the concept of turning these books into a card game.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already in process of doing that, which that's going to be fantastic. I was approached by someone else about doing a possible video game series.
Wow.
Which I'm excited about. I've got a lot of other options on the table that are now at my disposal that really weren't before. I'm going to add a layer of interactivity to the books that frankly I've never tried before, and I'm not sure if anyone else has either. What I did is, since my books are based in real locations,
mm-hmm.
I've taken a Google map, a Street View map, and I've tagged these locations in this map and saved the map. So now every time someone purchases one of the electronic copies, or even a hardback copy, the link will be written in the hard copy. And if they can go to my website, they'll not only be able to look at the map, they'll be able to zoom in on a street level view and literally see the spot where that scene took place. And I think that's going to add a much bigger
depth. Now that's neat as hell. I would be doing that every time I would be just speeding along looking for that link just to do that. That is, I've never heard that done before.
Every major fight scene, every major scene, significant scene in the book is going to have a tag on this map. And if you're reading a scene where they're at the jail and you want to see what the jail, front of the jail looks like, you click on the link and zoom. It zooms in on the street level and you get a look at the front of the county jail.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm telling you, I can't wait, and I see nothing but success and just nothing but big things in your future, DA. This is good stuff, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and stuff to do the show, and special thank you to your wife there for lending you to us for an hour, I should say. And that's always special. I always try to give shout outs to people's loved ones like that, because it's really, I tell people all the time, you can be the quarterback and get the ball down the field, but it's a lot easier when you got a good team with you, you know.
So my wife has been my muse. She's been my encouragement, my cheering section. She's also my first line of defense as an editor. She actually helps me edit the books, and that's a great line of defense, because since we've been married 20 years, she's not in the slightest bit afraid to tell me, this part's really bad, you need to fix it.
Right. And you probably listen to that.
there are times we haven't seen eye to eye on things. I'm like, I really like this part, I don't want to change it. And she'll say, well, it doesn't really flow. And she's been done a great job of keeping me on track and helping me keep the books where they need to be.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Well, it's about that time. Like I said, I really appreciate you taking the time out. We're going to have links and everything. This podcast, or this show, this live show, will be converted to a podcast here in about 15 minutes and will be available for free on iTunes in the morning. It takes about it takes overnight for that to – iTunes takes a little time. But folks can listen to it and download it or whatever they need to do with it right then and there. DA, thank you so much for being on the show and making our Halloween show a little more Halloween-y. And it's awesome.
Well, no problem. Thank you for having me on. I love doing the show. It's fantastic being on here. And I love doing the chat room where I can talk to people and hear some of the questions that I don't normally get a chance to answer. But it's been a wonderful experience for me writing these books. When like I said, I'm just a farm kid from rural Missouri, a little town called Lebanon, about an hour north of Springfield is where I was born, and we lived on a small farm outside of Lebanon. So being just a poor rural farm kid growing up and seeing how far these books have reached, when I get reviews or emails from somebody as far away as Australia and even in one case in Dubai.
Wow.
It's a humbling experience for me. It's a fantastic thing. And it just shows that I've, I've really reached far beyond the farm.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up reading some fantastic authors, and my first real experience with anything other than most biographies or kids' novels was the Tolkien novels. Mm. And those really what inspired me to want to be a writer in my own right. And I'm so glad I'm getting to live that dream now, to get to reach people through my writing, and I hope I get to continue to do that for years to come. I've met some amazing people like Tony Baker and yourself and Roger Noriega over NDB Media and the guys over at creepercast.com and a ton of other writers in the genre. I've met some amazing people. Both fans of the work and people with their own novels out there, and it's been an amazing experience, and I wouldn't have traded it for the world.
Well, there you go, folks. How was that? You know, you just plain and simple, and that's just the way it is, and that's DA, and that's great. I'm going to be reading a lot of DA tonight, actually, I don't know, before bed. Maybe I'll wait in the morning. No, I'm going to read it tonight. Okay. Well, we're out of here, folks. We will be back next Thursday. We've got a very cool guest scheduled for next Thursday, which I will be releasing in the morning, all the details about that. So I will want to – oh, cool. I want to – sorry, I got a note there passed to me. I want to give a special shout-out to everyone who tuned in and into the future. It was everyone listening to the podcast of this. Have a great night, everybody, and I hope everybody had a great and safe Halloween. Bye.